Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips to the PC. It is Saturday, the 7th of March, Anno Domini 2015. And you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. We will start with the news. Criminals are finding a way around Apple Pay's safeguards. Banks are reportedly getting hit with a growing number of fraud cases involving Apple's mobile payment system. But the recent reports involving the service have more to do with identity theft than breaking into Apple's encrypted biometric enabled payment service. What's happening is that criminals are setting up new iPhones with stolen credit card information, then impersonating the victim, using the other information easily found online, thus tricking the bank into thinking they are the authorized user in order to verify the new card. Given that criminals can easily purchase credit card details and other personal data off black market sites, this type of workaround isn't that difficult, security experts say. While these fraud cases stem from identity theft rather than a hack into Apple's pay system, it shows that there are still kinks in the services verification process that both Apple and the banks need to address. Both sides play a role because Apple could have done more, said Samuel Buchholz, co-founder of Kasaba Security. But where the fraud is really coming from is the bank's verification of those cards. It's not a compromise of any Apple security system that Apple has put in place. According to Apple's support page, when a user adds a card to Apple Pay, Apple encrypts the data, then sends it to the bank along with other information, including data about your iTunes account activity. I'm not sure why a bank needs to know that. And information about the device you are using, such as its current location. I don't know why a bank needs to know that. Or the name of the device. It's then up to the bank to decide whether to approve that card for transactions. The bank may request additional information to prove the card belongs to the user, but often the information that is asked for is easy for criminals to obtain online. Also, bankers may not require any additional information because they want the process to be as painless as possible. Banks jumped the gun. They wanted to make it easy, but it's a trade-off between usability and security, and they trended toward the side of usability rather than security, Buchholz said. One thing the banks and Apple could require to make the process safer is a PIN issued by the bank to register a new card, Buchholz said. This could be a PIN the bank mails to the user or one they have to log into their bank account to access for a one-time registration. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you, who's at fault in Apple Pay fraud, Apple or the banks? And your choices are, not surprisingly, Apple, banks, both, neither, and Rob Linton. And so far, both has squeaked ahead of Rob Linton, followed by Apple, banks, and neither. You can vote at the poll. And of course, I know you've got plenty more to say about this because I know you. And so when you're done, scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff. You'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. The first choice in poll discussion is 7 March 15. Who's at fault in Apple Pay fraud, Apple or banks? And so far we've got 4 posts, and we would love you to join in and add. Go to the bottom of the page, and you'll see where you can add your voice to the discussion. And then come back here and join us, because you can give us a call. And I want to point out, because over the last couple weeks, several people have asked me this question. How do you make contact with us during the show? On the right, the second thing down is call us. Saturday, 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern. 585-966-5299. Or 1-800-790-0415. Or text us at 585-209-9010.
If you have a very small...
And right under that is Listen Live on Jazz 901, and that's a link to take you to the Listen Live page. I honestly can't do more for you.
If you have a very small screen, you may need to stretch it wider or scroll to the right.
Or scroll to the right. Scroll either down or to the right or both, and you'll find it there. All right, to the phones.
One thing we should remind folks is tonight, everybody has to set their clocks forward. You spring forward.
Or spring ahead, that's right.
Spring forward, fall back. It's right. The easiest way. I've always remembered it.
Yeah.
You know, learned that way in school because folks always get confused, and it's like, no, it's very simple.
Do any of us have anything that doesn't auto-update anymore?
The microwave and the stove.
The microwave in your car.
My coffee maker.
Oh, your coffee maker.
There's a few of them still.
Sorry,
yep.
Sorry, it just doesn't.
Set yourself a reminder.
No, I've already went around. And
oh, so today you're wrong.
Well, somebody changed the clock in here already.
Yeah, they've already changed them in here. The only thing I'm relying on right now is my actual phone, cell phone that I carry.
Right.
And speaking of cell phones, I got another one, a topic I want to talk about later on.
All right.
New one that I saw.
Perfect. But we will go to the phones at the moment, and we will talk to Mike from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's up?
I got a request and two questions about the same subject.
Yeah.
The request is, since I can't take notes as fast as I would like, do you mind if I record this from the phone?
Yes.
Okay.
No, of course we don't mind.
Okay.
Go right ahead. You will also find that Steve records the show.
Okay.
And it is available online a couple of days later. But you're certainly welcome to record this through the phone.
Okay.
So you've got you're just going to, whatever it is on...
I'll put a beep in every few seconds to remind you you're recording.
I think his phone will do that. What kind of phone do you have?
I'm not doing it. I'm doing it on my landline, but I use a program from Audacity, program from SoundForge.
Sure.
And I think it's a $15 device that I got from Radio Shack back 15 years ago.
Sure.
I'm a freelance journalist, so sometimes with the permission of the people I interview, I record our conversations.
Yeah. No wonder you were so... polite and correct about it.
And there was a big mess a couple of weeks ago about Comcast. You call tech support and they always say we're going to record this for security or training or whatever. Mm-hmm. This one guy who's been having a problem, he said that to the Comcast rep that he's going to record it, and they hung up on him.
Yep.
They don't want to be recorded.
That's exactly right.
Because there was a recent case, it might even have been the same guy, who got free installation because he had recorded the Comcast rep saying he would get free installation. And when he got the $200 bill, he said, no, you said it would be free. No, he didn't. Yes, you did. I have a recording.
Yep. All right, Mike, you are perfectly free to record this call to your heart's content. In fact, I will take this moment to say it's copyleft under attribute 2. And so you can do anything you want with it as long as you mention that it came from Soundbite. So go ahead.
Oh, the only reason I'm recording it is that this way I can focus on our conversation instead of scrambling away.
Right, and I do understand that.
Okay. By the way, you guys really ought to do you ought to do sports. Your delivery is terrific. It really is good.
I think. Thank
okay.
you.
two problems. First, Shockwave Flash.
Yeah.
Crashes again and again on my laptop. 2, 3, 4. Sometimes even more times a day, I will get a notice saying that Shockwave Flash crashed. I'm on the web. All of a sudden, everything slows up, and I don't know what to do about it. The most annoying part of it is not the slow up, because it's not that noticeable, but it is that I get this notice, and I have to respond to it, and the machine stops for a second to recalibrate or do whatever it does.
Right. Now, okay, so several questions. What operating system?
I'm running, I have Windows 8 on the machine, but I'm running it as Windows 7 because I don't like the Windows 8 format.
Right. So you're, but yeah, okay. All right, Windows 8 in 7 mode, now, so you're
right.
Not using the Metro, and it's not that anymore, the whatever
right.
It is interface. And how much RAM do you have?
I can check. I believe an appropriate amount of RAM. I'll have to go to my PC and.
All right, not important at the moment. And what browser are you using?
I'm using Mozilla Firefox.
Okay.
I ran into a lot of problems with Internet Explorer, so I decided to go to Mozilla. I also
surprise on that one.
Google web browser as well, though. My main one is Mozilla.
Yeah, what can happen is bad guys find vulnerabilities in Flash all the time, and so it gets updated very frequently, and sometimes those updates don't work. So usually what you have to do is completely uninstall Flash, and then choose not to reinstall it. Right. Many websites are moving away from Flash and using newer technologies, and so you often don't need Flash much anymore. Mm. And Google Chrome has Flash built in and updates it itself. Mm-hmm. So some people like doing that for anything with Flash. But there's instructions on Adobe's website that I just posted on our website too, at soundbites.org, to download the uninstaller, which will completely remove all of the cruft that Flash can leave behind.
And will that eliminate the problem and at the same time not leave me with a noticeably slower moving machine?
Yeah, it should completely remove Flash from the computer. And then what I would recommend is don't reinstall it until you run across a website that says it really needs it. And then you can decide if you want to install it there or not.
The other thing you might try is Chrome. And the reason I say that is because they use their own version of Flash.
Right.
Which is not as prone to problems as the one from Adobe.
I am running Chrome, but as again, that's not my preferred website and everything
that I
need and all the bookmarks and all that sort of stuff. And my web address that I use for work and personal business, they're all on Mozilla Firefox through Yahoo.
Well, you can import all of those bookmarks into Chrome if you like. But what some people do is they'll keep Chrome just as the browser they use for Flash.
Right.
If they ever need Flash.
Exactly.
Okay.
What's likely happening is it's got something to do with the Flash Player plugin's protected mode.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are ways to disable protected mode. That's not a bright thing to do.
Because then you make yourself more vulnerable to whatever bad guys are trying to do.
Right. Instead of crashing, you get infected.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So crashing is, in fact, preferable.
Can I go to Google Chrome? I probably could use Google Chrome, and then could I then make Yahoo my web page?
Absolutely. Just the way you've set up Firefox, you can set up Chrome the same way. If you go in Chrome, on the far left, there are three little parallel lines,
mm-hmm.
which kind of look like a menu. That is the setup menu. And if you look at that, if you tap that, you'll see a whole bunch of things, including settings. And if you open up settings, you can set the home button. You can also set your preferred home page. If you go down and open up advanced, you can see stuff you can do with Bluetooth and privacy and doggone everything.
Can I also pull on or attach to my Google Chrome website the same sorts of toolbars that I find under Mozilla?
Yes, but that leads me to a second problem, which is it may be the toolbars that are causing the crashing.
Too many toolbars that conflict with other toolbars.
Right. Don't forget, toolbars are written by third parties, so they at no point make sure that those toolbars all work with each other.
Probably the best thing from the sound of it would be to simply delete Adobe Shockwave.
Right, and if you remove Shockwave from your system, there will be websites you cannot view.
So then I could go to Google Chrome to view them.
Exactly.
Right. Many of those websites are now shifting over to newer technologies like H.264 and will recognize you don't have Flash and then just switch to the newer format.
Right, so if you have Flash, it will try to use it and crash. If you don't have Flash, it will try to use a different technology and likely not crash.
Well, okay. Good advice. One second question that also has to do with web access.
Yeah,
and I know I'm taking up a lot of time.
Hold on. We have to take a break. Stay on the line.
Sure.
And we'll come back to you after the break. Okie doke?
Yep.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Mike from Rochester, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. It's the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites, and it's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we have Mike from Rochester waiting on the line, I hope. Are you there?
Yep, still
here. Excellent. What's your last question?
Okay, last question. Sometimes when I go on websites, YouTube, others, for example, I'll go on Media Matters.
Yeah.
And click on one of their videos, and I'll see the video, but can't hear a darn thing. My sound system appears to be working properly because I can still pick up sound from, for example, YouTube or radio stations and things like that. But for some strange reason, I go to these websites, and it's silent.
That may be related to your flash problem. It's not crashing all the way, just crashing audio.
Right.
Yeah.
Again, try those sites with Chrome.
Okay.
And my suspicion is you'll hear them fine.
Okay, I'll give it a shot. A quick plug. Whenever I tune into your show, guys, I may not know exactly what you're talking about. I am a bit of a rube when it comes to computers. But you always make it interesting. Though I have to give you a correction.
Uh-oh.
Okay. Yours is not the oldest computer-oriented radio show in the universe.
Uh-oh, what is?
Alpha Centauri has been broadcasting for a much longer time, but the broadcast takes so long to get to Earth that right now they're talking about Commodore 64s.
You got us.
Take care.
Thank you so much. Well, until somebody from Alpha Centauri actually complains.
Yeah, until we get phone
calling us.
When we get that phone call, I'm putting them right through.
Yeah,
and they
no
can
question.
Have as much time. We will run through breaks or anything else. Yeah.
Well, the 4-year light delay will be tough.
Yeah, right.
But that is where our local planning office is, where the plans
right.
for the hyperspace bypass are.
That's right. but if we get a call from Alpha Centauri. We'll stop saying where the log is running.
I want to know how that would show up on the phone. Because, you know, we have caller ID.
If we get
out of area.
It says it's out of area.
Restricted.
Yeah.
Unknown. Yeah. Well, they may have called any time in the last 4 years and it hasn't gotten here yet.
Yeah.
Past 25.
Right. No, well, it's 4 years. 4 light years.
Oh.
Alpha Centauri is 4 light years away. So if they made the call now at the speed of light, it would be, it's 4 years to get here.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So I want to go back to the Apple Pay issue again, that what's the core of what's happening is stolen credit cards are being used and people don't know they're stolen yet until they either they're usually when their bank calls them or they bother looking at their bill at the end of the month. So one of the recommendations is to go online and look at your bill, a week.
And that's not hard to do.
At least every week, if not more. So you're not surprised by these bills at the end of the month when you've got fraud. We run into this a lot in our store where people were suspicious of the credit card that's being used, and so we'll ask if it's been reported stolen. The answer is no, and then like a week later, the credit card company takes the money away from us. So we're out the product and we're out the money because now the credit card is reported stolen, and the person gets their money back. And the vendors lose it.
Right.
So check your credit cards a little more often, your balances and your statements. Make sure there isn't any fraud. New regulations are coming down. I think it's by October of this coming year, of 2015, that vendors are going to be moving to chip and PIN, which is real big in Europe.
Yep.
So instead of a swipe and a signature, you'll get a new credit card that has a chip in it and with a PIN code. And so you put your card in the slot, and then you have to type the PIN to verify the transaction.
Oh! Oh, that's so hard. I have to type the PIN.
It's exactly like the debit card you're already using. Swipe and PIN. And credit card fraud is so easy because all people need are the numbers on your card. They don't need a signature. Hardly anyone looks at the signatures anyway. So it's very easy to steal credit cards. And with chip and PIN, the PIN has to match the chip in the card. And so until that chip is counterfeited, which probably will happen, but that's tougher, then it's much more secure. And many estimates have shown that credit card fraud can drop 40 to 50% with chip and pin. And it's already widespread across Europe. And in fact, one of the podcasts I listened to, that someone just got back from London, and he apologized at a store for saying, "I'm just an American. I don't have a chip and pin." And the guy said, "Oh, that's okay." And he pulls out the big kerchunker.
Oh, yeah.
So we're used to that. So kerchunk, and then you sign.
Yeah.
Oh, that's okay. We get Americans coming through here. So it's you have to necessarily be aware of that.
What just happened?
Something went.
That was weird. All right, back to the phone. Okay, back to the phones. Our next caller is Charlie from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Charlie. What's up?
Hi. First of all, actually, I've got too many things going at once here, and more than I can handle. Steve knows my brain problems from the Apple Cider, applecider.org that we're members of. I had to put a plug in for it there. I don't know if you guys can. But my problem actually involves Google search.
Okay.
So, all right, I've got myself trimmed down to where I can see you guys, but I'm not listening on the headphones, so I don't get the time delay confusion.
All right.
And specifically, I'm doing this on a Lenovo netbook with Windows 7 and Google Chrome browser. Now, I don't know how much of that is relevant to what I'm running into. When I do a Google search and the results page comes up, okay?
Yeah.
Sometimes, and sometimes not, to the left of each article, so to speak, on the page, there'll be a little blue-green sort of triangle pointing at it. This is supposed to be a convenience, I believe. When you hit the down arrow, that little triangle goes down to the next article, and then if you hit enter, you go into the article.
Right.
So it's supposed to be easier than the strain of trying to click on the article. But the thing is, a lot of times I like to just go down line by line to look at the full text of the little blurb under the article. And when that feature is on, that arrow problem, I can't do that. It just, you know, and it jumps all over the place, and my ADD goes nuts, and, you know. So I kind of looked in settings trying to figure out if there was anything there. I didn't find anything. Steve can assure you that I'm a relative ignoramus in this stuff. Any ideas on how that feature works and how to turn it on and off?
Well, I'm finding it turns on when I hit the tab key, which tabs into the search results, and then my up and down arrow is actually moving that little pointer. And if I hit tab again, then it turns off the pointer, and the up and down arrow moves you up and down one line at a time.
Cool. So if you don't mind, I will quickly open another tab.
Yeah, I'm in the Safari browser on the Google website, so I think it's an attribute of the Google search page, not necessarily the browser itself.
Okay, that's what I was kind of thinking. So anyway, I'm just going to type in a search thing here to bring up a result that I can go up and down in and see if that seems to be my answer. Okay, so I brought up cars or something like that, and I don't have the little arrow yet, so if I hit the tab key.
That's weird. Nick on his Chromebook is not getting it in Chrome browser, but me on my MacBook with Safari browser, I am getting it.
Okay, all right, so it's not dependent on the browser or the OS or whatever.
Something in the Chrome services. And there may be somewhere inside the Google settings is a...
Show me the arrow again.
Is a setting for keyboard equivalents or something like that.
So right, the Google settings rather than the Chrome browser settings.
Right.
Okay.
Stop. Is that a green arrow or a blue arrow?
It's a little blue arrow.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and it's not the little down arrow back in the article that takes you down to whatever the heck it is there.
Right.
It's one of those convenience features that someone liked, and they stuck it in, and when you don't like it, you can't fix it.
All right. No, I've lost. Let me go back to the tab.
Please remove the blue arrow.
Your smiling faces. Are you checking Google settings yourself to see if you can find that kind of thing?
Yeah, I don't see it. In the search settings, I am logged into my Google account, but you are too. So we're trying to figure out what's different between Nick's computer and my computer.
Yeah,
that it's not doing that thing.
Yeah, it seems to be. Turn off the instant prediction results.
Well, okay, but is that the one that just guesses what your next word is that you're going to be looking at?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that's the results as you type.
Right, right.
I don't know. I don't know. I'll have to do some actual... I can't... This is terrible radio. I can't test this because there's about 15 things to test. But we will test it and figure out what the issue is.
That would be wonderful. Would it be too much to ask when you figure it out? Steve has my email address. I don't really want to broadcast it on the radio.
No, of course not. But Steve can text you.
Yeah.
And, or email you or whatever.
And if I find... the Google Navigate... No, that's not it. When I find it, I can also post it on the website, Soundbite's website, too.
The Soundbite site, not the Cider site. Okay.
Yeah.
Have I put in enough plugs for apple cider yet, sure. Steve?
Yeah, and this coming... is good. Good point. This coming week is Saturday. Yeah, Wednesday, March 11th is the apple cider meeting at East High School at 7 o'clock. We're going to have Internet guru Jerry Seward speaking.
That's excellent.
We're going to have a show and tell panel. And it's also our elections, so if you show up, there's a good chance you could get elected.
Okay. Well, I won't take any more of your time, but I do appreciate the fact that this is kind of a stump the stars problem.
It's not browser-specific. It's not OS-specific. It seems to be just the Google search page.
Yeah, so I don't feel quite as dumb. All right, thank you, gentlemen. I'll let you move on to your next caller.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it has to do with predictive results.
The Google Navigation Blue Triangle. So I'm finding things, how to get it back, and I'm finding other things, please, please, please remove it.
Right.
So some people really love it, some people really hate it.
Right. We'll figure that out. It does look like it's you avoid it by turning off instant prediction results.
The other option, too, is instead of using the arrow key to move down one line... In most browsers, if you hit the space bar, it moves down one page.
Oh, and see, I've got instant results turned off. And so, in fact, I'm not seeing it. So I'm turning it on now. And I'll reload this page. And I probably have to restart my browser, actually. But I suspect that's exactly it.
So I got to find where you turn that on or off.
In settings.
Instant predictions.
Search settings.
Never show instant results. Okay. So, which is kind of interesting. People have created websites where you start typing, how do I, and it finishes the sentence for you.
Right.
Based on what other people have typed. Yeah, that looks like is it.
Yep, that's it. So I just turned it on, and now away. I got the little blue arrow. And if I go and turn it off again, assuming I can find my search settings, there they are. I can never show instant results. Save that and go back. Yeah, it's gone. So clearly, that's exactly the place to do it.
All right. So we'll get that posted shortly.
Right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Thomas from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Thomas. What's up?
Yes. My question is, sometimes if I go to a website and try to play their video, I get like a gray circle with an exclamation point, and then nothing plays. It's like it's grayed out and empty. And then on other days, it plays fine. What is that?
Whatever media player it's using, which is probably Flash, this is the Flash show today, is old and buggy and vulnerable, and so the operating system has blocked it from running.
Okay, but sometimes Chrome, it would work on Chrome and not on the Explorer.
Right. Chrome has its own Flash built in, and Chrome updates it for you. But if you've installed Flash yourself for Internet Explorer or Firefox,
yes, I have.
Then you have to update it yourself.
But I think it's already updated, but like, say, today it won't run on Explorer, and tomorrow it would. It's sporadically.
So you may have an auto update on.
You have an auto update, and you're right now at the point where your system is saying, no, this version of Flash is too old and buggy, and then next time you go, it'll be updated, and it'll work fine.
But, and also, there's the point of when that particular piece that he's trying to listen to was created. It might work with an older version of Flash, but might not work with a current one.
Yeah.
So you
there's a number of variables. Yeah, there's a number of variables there.
Usually, if you click on that icon, the triangle icon, it will tell you that your player is outdated and take you to the website that you need to update it from.
Yeah, no, this is a circle with a gray exclamation point in it. Have you ever seen it?
Yeah.
Oh, you have. Okay. So in other words, don't use auto update on the Flash.
No, do use auto update on the Flash.
Use the auto update.
And if you get that icon, that means that the auto update hasn't worked yet, and so you could do a manual update. Go to adobe.com yourself and down.
Alternately, you can just continue to go to that site with Chrome.
Yeah. So you recommend the auto update then?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Because there are so many issues with Flash that...
Actually,
that
what we recommend is don't use Flash.
Yeah, don't use Flash, yeah. Because there are so many issues with Flash and Adobe updates it so frequently, there are a lot of fake Flash updaters that will pop up and say, you need to update Flash, and people go, oh, God, not again, and click on it. And then you get the fake bad program that gets put into your system. In fact, there's a couple of them around for the Mac that are they're sort of bypassing Apple's security. Called the Gatekeeper, which stops bad programs from getting in, but a bad developer signed their program, and so Apple doesn't know it's a bad program because it's a legitimate digital signature.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour. It's, as far as we know, the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
The one thing I was going to bring up, I didn't get a chance to see the news that if you sent it to us.
What?
Well, I was a little busy. What can I say? Seeing the actual pictures of that new Galaxy S6.
Oh, yeah.
The Edge. With the Edge.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But here's one thing Steve will be happy about. They're sitting there touting that it's going to be more expensive than the iPad or the iPhone 6.
Yeah, they're also making it more like the iPhone in that you can't expand the memory and you can't change the battery. That's a step backwards for me. I'm done with Samsung.
Yeah. The one cool thing about the Edge, and they're wondering why you call it the Edge, is if the phone is laying, say, down,
yeah,
on the Edge, there's lights. So you can tell by the lights if you've got a message.
It's more than lights. It's actually an LCD.
Yeah, you can take the LEDs and code up to, I think it's 5 users that you expect, you know, messages from. And it will flash that color on the edge of the phone. So if you just quick look over, if you are expecting a message, you know, because we can get a lot of messages in, but from a certain person that's on this list, you know, the 5, it'll flash that color.
Yeah.
That's way cool. But the one thing, as you know with me, the one thing that I'm always hypercritical about is battery life.
Yep.
And when I was looking for the specs, I think, oh, okay, good. I found all these specs about the camera and the screen and all this other stuff. And it's Gorilla Glass 4 and all this cool stuff. And you get down to battery. It's blank.
Yep. Well, a lot of websites have run surveys on their blogs about battery life and thinness. Because thinness is the new buzzword. And so the phones, each generation of phone is thinner and thinner, which means the battery is physically smaller because they don't have room to put in a battery mechanism to hold the battery in and the battery door because it has to be thinner. And most of the surveys are showing people wouldn't mind their phone a little bit thicker if they got more battery life.
Exactly.
And the other side of the coin is we've got, especially now, these 6-inch phones that it's got a giant battery in it, so it's got really long life, right? No, we're going to put a quad HD screen on it that sucks the battery life. We're going to put a 6-core processor, which sucks the battery life.
Yeah.
If you put that battery on your flip phone, it would last for a month.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, no lie.
Yeah.
But, like you said, though, that's the biggest deterrent for me. I mean, there's no as much as I love this Galaxy 6, until I see the specs on the battery life, and I got a suspicion, like Steve's saying, that, you know, it's going to be less.
I would gladly, the least important thing to me is how thin the phone is.
Yeah.
You know, and so if they could make it even a half an inch thicker, a quarter of an inch thicker.
Well, 2 or 3 millimeters thicker. That's what
every
generation is a millimeter thinner.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it does.
Okay, leave it a millimeter thicker. That's more battery.
And double my battery life.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. No, yes. I have no problem with that. I mean, heck, back in the day when I first started with a cell phone, it was a cube.
Yep.
They called it the brick.
It was a brick. And 90% of it was the battery.
Yeah.
Yep. And it still only lasted 4 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, see, it's the horsepower wars in cars. You know, my car's got 450 horsepower. It's better than yours with only 430.
Yeah, right.
But
right.
Well, because that's because the engine's bigger.
Right.
But the S6, though, it does look nice, and it's like, but until I see that, I have no desire to actually move until, you know, I see the battery life, because right now I've got a Razer Max X.
Right.
And that thing, I can go 3-4 days without having to really charge it if I want.
And let me ask you this question. I have 4 cores in my phone. Do I really need 8?
Yeah, because last year's had 4. So this year's has to have... And how are people going to know you've got the new phone?
Yeah, right, exactly. And even though, yes, I am a geek, do I really need an 8-core phone?
Well, see, the thing that is, though, is more and more folks are starting to use their phones
for everything.
For everything else. The emailing and, you know, everything is text now. You know, or you want a quick search for something. Or you're looking up, say, the closest place for a restaurant or anything else. Boom, it's there with the new LTE. You know, I mean.
Well, that's, and the other thing that Samsung has done with the S6 is that the smallest capacity is 32 gigs. They're not offering a 16-gig phone.
Mm-hmm.
Many companies, including Apple, do a 16-gig phone because it's a hair cheaper. Although, ironically, the cost difference between 16 and 32 gigs of actual NAND memory is what, $1, $2?
If they're
right.
But in the product line, it's $100 in the price difference of the phones. And we get people into our store all the time with a 16-gig iPad or 16-gig iPhone, and it's full. And the choice is delete something or get an external hard drive to store your pictures on. Well, I don't want to do either of those.
Right.
So it's, starting with 32 gigs is a nice deal because people always fill up what they have.
Now, I've got my phone generally lasts, and I use it pretty regularly, lots of phone calls, lots of texts, looking stuff up, blah, 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 blah. It lasts a day and a half. If I turn off wireless, it lasts a couple of days.
Yeah,
if I turn off Bluetooth, it lasts longer, blah, blah. But let's say I get 2 days out of it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's got a 2,800 milliamp battery in it. The Samsung Galaxy S6 has a 2,600 milliamp battery. It's a lower battery, and it's running twice as many cores faster, and the screen size is bigger. I don't think it's going to have a huge battery life. I just don't see it.
Yeah. That's what I'm afraid of.
Yep.
And I think for a lot of folks, that's going to be the downfall. Why get a phone, pay that much money, and it's not going to last you the day?
Well, and that's part of the problem, that marketing people define the day as 8 hours. Oh, yeah, the phone lasts a day. Most people run their phone for 10, 12, 15 hours a day.
Yeah, I mean,
and they charge it at night. And so only when they go to sleep when they charge it. And how many TV shows do you see where the phone is sitting on the counter, the nightstand, not on a charger? How do those phones keep working?
Yeah. Now, you know, and I don't remember if I made this one of our things. You can now buy furniture from IKEA that actually charges your phone. Oh, I do have this. You need the key, and they need to be Qi enabled. The phones that have the charger is called QI, which is pronounced Qi.
Okay.
That's what I have in the back of my phone. So I've got a little disc on my desk at home. Mm-hmm. I just put the phone on that, and it charges. I don't have to plug anything in ever.
Oh, that's sweet.
I have one for my car, except it's in my wife's car, and she can't find it. that lets me do exactly the same thing. So when I get in the, I never plug and unplug anything. Now, just set it on the thing and boom, it goes.
Does it have terminals exposed on the back?
No.
Because that's what was always the fear on the early versions of those, where they were wireless, but you had to touch the two terminals together. Those terminal settings would get corroded.
Just look.
It's nothing. It's just a back. And actually, it's not even built in. This is a different back that you can buy.
Oh, okay.
It's a Kevlar back. You set it on the thing, and it goes doo-doo. Charging, great. Everything is good. And when I take it off, it's charged. It's done. It's just pick it up, put it down.
Sweet.
So maybe they're all, you know, all of those people have, of course, if they have an Apple phone, well, they can change the back, I think. No, you can't. Not on an Apple phone.
Mm-hmm. Not easily.
Not right.
Yeah.
Not without a blowtorch. So
it's a couple sticks of dynamite.
That Qi charging thing makes a lot of sense to me because now I never plug anything in. I'm thinking you get it. They're only $35. I'm thinking you get a second one for the bedroom. For those nights when I'm the guy who has to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and take my daughter to work, I can just lay it down on that. It'll charge, and it's my alarm clock and everything else now. So, and they're cheap, and you can get them anywhere. And I got one, you know, I set it on my dashboard, and I can put the phone in it, and it grabs it and charges it, you know, so if I'm doing GPS stuff, it all works. So
there is some hope in the Apple world. The Apple Watch uses magnetic inductance charging, so it uses a magnet to clip to the charger,
right?
Which implies that future generations of Apple products might also use this same technology.
Well, I will tell you right now, it is the single most convenient thing ever. Because, like I said, those chargers are $35, so I could put them anywhere.
Yeah,
anywhere I want. I mean, if you're, you know, I'm retired. God bless me. But if you had, you know, you could put one in your desk at work. You could put one on your desk at home. And in fact, most people take their phone out and lay it down on the desk anyway when they're at work rather than keep it in their pockets. So this way, you instead of just laying it on the table, you're laying it on the charger. And it's constantly charging. So battery life may not be as great as you want it to be, but when you can recharge it everywhere for $35, who cares?
And we have so many things that need charging these days, your phone and your tablet, you know, your smartwatch.
Well, and you can buy, depending on your tablet, of course, you can buy backs that do the same thing for those, and your smartwatches do the same thing now. So if you're all about the Qi chargers, chargers, then you can scatter them everywhere and charge everything you want without ever plugging a thing in again.
That's rather unique.
It's very cool, actually. You should look that up.
Of course, there's a competing technology, right, that other companies are using?
There's two other technologies,
and they're not compatible with each other.
Right, right, right.
Of course.
Right.
Why do that?
But I think it was... now I got to go back and look. I think it was the S6. One of the choices there was that it did both Qi and one of the others. Two out of three... It might not be. I was looking up five or six different things. Maybe not. But pretty cool stuff all the way around, I'll tell you right now. My next phone, whatever it's going to be, I want it to do charging, maybe preferably with Qi because that's what I have.
Now, if you just put a few Tesla coils around and we'd have wireless power everywhere we went.
Well, that's essentially what this is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's wireless charging.
Yeah.
It's not... distance, what one of the three, you can be up to 9 meters away.
Okay.
Which is what in feet? That's
36, 40
feet something away. So you could just put one in a room, and if you're in the room, you're charging. So you're reading a book on your tablet, and it's charging.
Yeah.
You're in the room with your phone, and it's charging. But you know, put one in your car. And it's charging. I love the idea of that, you know. And then let's say three or four of us all have that and we're all in the same place.
Area, yeah.
They're all charging. Now, I love this idea. I think the days of having to plug in a cord to charge your phone are numbered. And I, like I said, I have not used the cord ever since I got this phone. Ever. Hmm. Ever. I've never even opened there's a cover over it. I've never even opened it.
Oh.
I probably should just to see what's under there.
Yeah, well, it's a unique connector on the S5.
Yes, it's a unique connector. Yeah, and I don't care because I don't.
It's not the small one. It's a small and it's a wider one.
I've seen the actual plug.
Yeah, there's mini and there's micro, and one of them is narrower and one of them is wider, and it's a pain in the ass.
This is a double. Yeah, you've got the narrow one, and next to it, because it's all
slightly wider
two,
one.
Yeah. It's a slightly longer one.
Because that was a big issue in the European Union. They passed a law that said every phone has to use a USB charger.
Right.
So that every phone uses the same cable.
Right.
To cut down on proprietary cables. That hasn't made it here to America yet.
Right now, the S5 uses a proprietary. Although I think you can still use the smaller cable.
They probably have an adapter. Apple has that, a lightning to the USB adapter.
Still charge it.
For Europe.
Maybe.
I don't even care.
I haven't tried it. I don't use it.
Yeah,
I use it for anything. So that Qi charger is great.
But like I said, which kicked this all off, right now with all these phones and, you know, the possibilities of, like you say, do I really need an 8-core processor?
Right.
And that there's no, because my contract's up come July 1st, there's no real compelling reason right now for me to sit there and say, yeah, I'm going to go get this one because I really would like to try this one out.
Right.
Because the phone that I've got does great, and the key thing for me is the battery life, and I've got it.
And I'm really looking at the Project Ara phone, the modular phone where you get to put
somebody put out a picture of what an Ara phone might look like.
Yeah. Well, you can look at the actual Project Ara thing on Wikipedia.
Yeah, so they plugged them all together, and it was this unwieldy conglomerate of mess.
Well, yeah, they're not that big, actually. So. but it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. We don't know when they're going to actually release it. They've been saying over and over again it's soon, but we'll see. All right, listen. I hate to say this, but we're halfway through this week, our time together this week. But that means we've still got a whole nother hour of this nonsense for no discernible reason. So take a little break for yourself, a little bio break or whatever it is you do during. I know you listen avidly to our underwriters. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. We're the longest running computer show in the known universe because I don't know a lot about Alpha Centauri. And we're on the truly great and solely member-supported, and thanks to all you members who have supported us, Jazz 90.1. It's Soundbites, back in just a couple of minutes.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve, next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Follow Jazz 90.1 on Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And I missed that comment.
And 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. What he said was, we're used to it. About your handwriting. Him! I didn't say... Okay. All right. I know it's that finger. That's the problem.
Yeah, I understand. I can't help it.
I do understand. Before we get to the phones, I want
to
say...
It was meant for Steve.
You used it so much, you broke it, right?
You broke it. Those of you who are watching us on the... whatever this is.
Ustream.
Can see that Dave has had surgery on the middle finger of his right hand. He's been showing it to us for, years, but yeah, certainly all day today.
Because I can.
Yeah, before we get back to the phones, I want to say, earlier we were talking about the Qi chargers, Qi chargers. So I looked them up, and it appears that, there are three competing standards, but I think Qi has won, and here's why. 15 automobile models have Qi chargers built in or available as a factory installed option. 18 automotive aftermarket chargers, more than 300 styles of Qi certified wireless chargers for home and office, and thousands of Qi chargers at McDonald's, Marriott, and other public locations.
Hmm.
Yeah, if they're in McDonald's, they won.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dan from Webster, New York. Welcome, Dan. What's up?
Well, a couple weeks ago, you were talking about failures of hard drives. Got me thinking about backups again.
Yep.
I have my C drive is a solid-state drive, and I've got a regular drive, which I use for data. So the C drive only has programs and, the system.
Yep.
Windows system.
And the swap space.
If there's a way to just back up the C drive. My data drive, I've got backed up about three different ways every night. But it got me thinking there ought to be some way to back up the drive with the programs and
here's the problem. All right, I always tell folks, don't worry about backing up the operating system or anything else. The key thing is when you're backing up, you want to back up your documents, your photos, your music, anything that is important that you have created and couldn't live without. The programs, the operating system, and everything else, if that C drive crashes, you've got to reinstall them anyways. They've got to start from scratch because you just can't, copy it off and put it back. It's got to re-register itself within the registry.
Right, and in addition, you can't back up open files on Windows, so you can't back up a system that's running because it's running.
So your registry files, the operating system files themselves,
right. All the stuff you actually want to back up, you can't back up.
There are very high-end programs that do have the option to back up open files, but they're $1,000.
Right. You can buy them.
Designed for servers.
Right. So our suggestion is generally make sure that your data are backed up and make sure you've got good backup copies of all the programs you've purchased.
Mm-hmm.
So that used to be a big deal. Well, it is a big deal now. You used to have physical disks for all the programs you bought.
Yeah.
So to reinstall wasn't a big deal. But now most everything is downloaded, and so you download the installer, and then your drive dies. You've lost the installer, and many companies won't let you re-download it again. You have to pay for it again, or you have to pay extra to maintain the ability to download it again, which is stupid.
Well, so you can save that download, initial download. That's what you should do.
Right. So
multiple backups of that.
And typically your downloads folder is in your user folder, which generally you just back up users, and then you get my documents and my pictures and your email and your downloads and all that stuff gets backed up.
Or you can just use Linux where everything's already built in and it's all there.
Yeah.
So just load it up.
Okay. So there's no really easy way to deal with it. I was looking through the Windows control panel, and it's says something about backup, and it says this: you can restore your system image, but it doesn't really tell you what a system image is.
Yeah, it's not.
Usually the image is.
Ignore it. Honestly, just ignore it. It's not going to do you as much good as you think. And I know we'll get 100 phone calls saying, I don't all the time.
Yeah.
You may back it up all the time. Have you ever restored it?
Yeah, really.
Because trust me when I tell you that doesn't work as well as the backup does.
Okay.
So I would worry more about making sure I could recreate my system, because as Dave said, if you have to restore the operating system, what would be the reason? Most likely your hard drive died.
Right.
So it's a brand new hard drive anyway. You have to reinstall from scratch anyway. So just make sure you've got all the pieces and parts rather than worrying about shoehorning something that's old into something that's new.
And that got rid of all the cruft that had been building up for years since your last install anyway.
I understand that. It's just, but I think about all the different little programs I've got running on the computer. It's sort of daunting to think about.
Well, that's why
which
we
ones you had and getting them all back up. I mean, I do save all the registration numbers and things like that.
Yeah.
But that's important, and that's a big part of it. But you really, one of the things that I learned to do as a system administrator, and let's be honest, everybody who owns a computer is their own system administrator. Every time I installed a program, I added to something I call a site book, S-I-T-E book. And what that is if I have to, I learned this for doing servers. If I've got to recreate a server at 3 o'clock in the morning, I don't want to guess and I don't want to remember. So right. Everything is written down, every program I've installed, every setting I've made, everything. And so all I have to do is go through that step by step, make sure I've saved all those pieces and parts, and I can recreate my system easily. And it sounds like a daunting task now, and it is, but if you if you did it when you started with the brand new computer.
And you might realize all the little programs that you installed once and never use anymore.
Well, right. there are a number of those, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So but I'm sorry, there's no magic. You can
there
use
are
a program.
There are backup programs where you boot the backup program and then make an image copy of your hard drive. So it's an identical copy of the hard drive, which you could then restore onto a brand new hard drive.
Right.
But every time you install a program, anytime you make changes to settings, you got to make a new image. So you have to reboot this other disk so it can image your hard drive because you can't easily back up files that are open.
Yeah, I think I did that story. I've been doing this for a long time, but I just haven't really had to do anything like that for a while. I just sort of started worrying about it when you start talking about drives failing after 5 years. And so
just a good excuse to buy a new machine.
Oh, I put this one together myself, and I've upgraded it continuously for a lot of years, so it's sort of attached to it.
Yep.
Right.
So anyway. The hammer that you replace the handle, replace the head, and same hammer, but everything's been replaced three times.
Yeah, I guess, but I got tired of buying computers. For a long time, I'd buy one, and it would be it'd be twice as good as the one I had, but it would still be a low-end computer. So then you come along, you want to add more memory. Oh, gee, this computer doesn't have more memory slots. So I finally said, I'm going to put together my own, and it's going to have, you know, a lot more power than I really need right now. So gradually I have now filled up the memory slots and I've upgraded the hard drive several times. And
That's one of the big issues we're seeing in the computer field is that market pressure is driving prices down. So that $300, $500 computer you buy, you're probably going to throw it away and buy another one next year.
Oh, yeah.
So you might as well buy the $1,500 computer now and have it last 5 years. You're better off in the long run.
My computer always cost $1,500 from 1980-something, 81 or something on, and then I got sort of tired of doing that. Yeah, I've actually looked at that. I'm sure I can go out and buy a $600 computer today, which, again, is like got twice as fast as the one I got. I just haven't faced up to doing that.
Right.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the information.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
So the biggest thing is have a copy of your data on a second drive or third drive.
Or third or fourth.
So just in case something happens. And also, it's often a good idea to have an off-site backup that, you know, in case of fire or flood or theft or, you know, your roof collapsing, your computer and your backup hard drive sitting right next to it are both destroyed.
Right. And it costs so little nowadays to buy a decent amount of backup, off-site backup storage. I mean, you get 15 gig here, 15 gig there, 15 gig somewhere else. But if I solved most of that problem by putting everything in Google Docs, and then I back that up every couple of days and download it through Google Takeout. And that's not what they call it. Yeah, they still do. It's called Google Takeout. Anyway, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Penfield, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
A couple of years ago, about a year and a half ago, I bought a router, a SkyDog router. I don't know if you've heard of it.
What's it called?
SkyDog. They no longer sell it. It was a Kickstarter campaign, but they were selling this router that had a lot of controls. It was a very, very, very family-friendly internet device where I can, with this backdoor dashboard where I can control, you know, what my kids can see, and it has a bunch of filters on it that I can, you know, monitor traffic or whatnot. Very, very user friendly. But somebody bought them out and they're no longer selling them. And I've been worried about when this dies, I'm going to need to replace it. Can you guys suggest a router that has some decent controls that I can monitor my kids' usage, that can filter out content.
Yeah, most of the routers have that, but it's not that easy to configure.
Yeah.
In fact, what we're seeing more and more people use is instead of having that in the router, you put it in your DNS. And so if you use a free service, OpenDNS.
Yeah, I can use that too.
Yeah, that can be your filtering and keeping bad sites from getting in through your system.
Yeah, and then the other thing that SkyDog did was you can actually schedule time. It has a grid of the week, and you can have start-stop times.
Right.
For each account, and it was just really cool, and I haven't found anything since that could replace it.
Those are called parental controls.
Yeah.
Netgear's routers have them. Not all. Some Netgear routers have them, and you can even control them through an app on your smartphone.
And then there's the Tomato routers and DDRW...
Yeah,
whatever that is.
They
are router software that you put onto the router hardware you already have and gives you more features and more options, including, in many cases, the parental controls and things like that.
But if you're looking to replace your router, check out the Netgear line.
Okay.
And look for the ones with parental controls and see what they can do. There's a bunch of things that you can do. And like I said, the really cool part about it is they have the... an app. You can do it through the web. Obviously connect to it through the web, but there's also an app that lets you control it. That way it's free. The app is free, obviously. And it's available in the App Store. It's available in Google Play. There's a PC version. There's a Mac version. So you can pretty much do whatever you need to do.
All right, cool. I'll check it out. I have one other quick question for you.
Yeah.
I know PCs have like all-in-one touchscreen monitors that that are built in PCs as well, but obviously Mac doesn't do that yet. I would love to have basically a large iPad. Could I buy a standard touchscreen, a standalone touchscreen, and put a Mac Mini in the back of it and turn it into a big iOS driven by a touchscreen?
Sure, there are several companies that do that. Not iOS. They do it for the Mac, for Mac OS.
I'm sorry, for Mac, yeah.
Yeah. Wacom has their Cintiq tablets that are basically giant touchscreens. There's also the ModBook, where you either send them your MacBook or buy one from them, and they turn it into a touchscreen.
Oh, wow. Okay. What was that last one called?
That's the ModBook. MODBOOK.
But that's for a laptop, not for the.
That's
Mac
for a laptop, yeah.
Oh no, yeah.
The Wacom.
It's like a plain 3-inch display.
Yeah, the Wacom Cintiq is that it's basically sold to graphic professionals as a touch tablet for drawing on, but it works as a regular tablet as well. There are also rumors Apple is having an announcement on Monday, and the big expected rumor is the Apple Watch. But there are also a lot of rumors about a 12-inch touch tablet, and whether that's going to be a 12-inch MacBook Air laptop or a 12-inch iPad Air, or both, is running rampant through the rumor mills as well.
Okay, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mina Francesco, and you. 19 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported, Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Al from Rochester, New York on the line. Welcome, Al. What's up?
Hey, guys. Good day to be talking about computers, right?
It's exactly right. Every day is a good day to be talking about computers.
Yeah. Hey, two things. First is want to thank you. A year or so ago, you got talking about LastPass and for tracking your passwords and everything.
Yep.
And I've been playing with it ever since, and it's been great.
Good.
It takes a lot of the worry and trying to keep track of 56 different passwords on 22 different sites.
Yep. Glad you like it.
Love it. I do have a question, though. Earlier, you were talking to a gentleman about backing up his hard drive, et cetera. First, there was a comment about it's really expensive to have a backup program to do images. question mark?
No, it used to be because of Ghost.
Well,
which was the big one, and if you actually wanted to use it for real, it was expensive.
The specific thing we were talking about is backing up open files.
Right.
Many of the commercial server-type backup programs that are designed to back up open files are relatively expensive. ArcServe is probably one of the big ones.
But if you're willing to shut down your machine and boot into a program like Clonezilla, then you can do it essentially free.
Okay. But just to clarify, I mean, I've used Ghost for about 15, 20 years, and it's only about $100. It does...
Except it's not maintained anymore.
Well, yeah. But yeah. You got Arcronus True Image. Looks like it does the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Arcronus does. Drive Clone does. Those are both not free. Clonezilla is free and does the same thing. DD Rescue is free.
Yeah.
Disk Copy from Apple is not free and is no longer maintained. So,
but right. Disk Utility comes with the Mac and will do clones.
Sure. Right.
So, but I'm just to my point. My real concern is that, and I know we have different opinions about this, but imaging my whole system is invaluable to me because if I lose my C drive. Yes, I can reload Windows in half an hour, but to reload everything else and all the serial numbers and all the settings and everything, it's going to be months.
Yeah, there's kind of a trade-off that you can have a fast backup or a fast restore, but not both.
Yeah. But Ghost and things, and I assume the other ones work the same way. I mean, it just runs in the background, and I have it set for every night for the minor stuff and twice a week for the system. I never even notice it, really. It's not a big deal. It's just insurance policy that I'm more than willing to pay for.
No, I absolutely get it. I absolutely do. It's not the way I do it, but that doesn't mean my way is right or your way is wrong or any of that nonsense. Yeah. It's just two different ways to do things. And again, I run on Linux. So, you create a script that says, here's everything. There are programs for Linux. I don't have them in my head off the top of my head. I can't remember the names. But where you can say, what's in my machine? Right, and it makes a script, which you then save and save and save. But when you build a new machine, you just run that script, and it makes it look like the old machine. Boom. Cool. Including part of that is it saves all of the settings and all that stuff. Okay. But again, that's for me. That's hit one button and walk away, have a cup of coffee.
Well, someday I'll learn Linux and I'll join that easy lifestyle.
There you go.
But I'm still dealing with Windows, so
easy
world doesn't
and free.
Work that way.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thanks, guys. I just didn't want you to give some people the impression that it was a mission impossible.
No, always keep us honest. Thank you.
Yeah, okay.
Bye bye. There are many, many programs that will do backups. There are many that will back up open files. But as Steve said, I don't know of a free one that will back up open files. So you have to shut it down, reboot it into the disk or whatever, and back it up that way. But again, if you do that, you only ever have to do that really every time. Well, no. You have to do that every time you add new software. And if you're smart, you've set your backup program so that it backs up things like your mail and everything else, which many which are always
files.
In different places. People who use Intuit's tax software often find that they didn't back anything up because it doesn't go into my documents. It has its own folder. So with each program you install, it is up to you and no one else to determine where it is saving its data and make sure you're backing up that data.
We have had
those data.
We've had so many people think they were backing up their Quicken file, and it turns out they were backing up the Quicken application.
Right.
Well, that's what I click when I want my file open, because that's a convenience of the computer. You open the application, it opens the file for you.
Right.
The very first time you told it where to save the file, it's a good idea to look at where you are saving your file, and then make sure you're backing up that file. But we have one poor guy backed up an alias, a shortcut to the application. And he brought in like 15 CDs that he had been backing up over time. And it was a backing up a shortcut to the application, not even his document.
Wow. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's up?
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I got a quick question. I was in the Windows Task Manager, and I saw a service that says BTH Serve. It says Bluetooth Support Service.
Yeah, BTH.
S-E-R-V.
Yeah.
Does that mean the computer actually has Bluetooth?
No, it means Windows is looking for Bluetooth service on the machine.
Okay, because it says it's stopped, and I was just curious as to what that was. And
it's so if your computer did have Bluetooth, that service would be running.
Okay.
Most likely.
Okay. Right. Windows will load everything.
Right.
Which, you know, you don't need 99% of what it loads. But
I noticed most of the things in here and services are stopped.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'd say 90% of them.
Right.
And I was just wondering what this was. And
Yeah,
that's exactly what it is. And what happens is Windows loads the service, and the service determines whether or not it is useful,
mm-hmm.
and then it stops or it starts, and maybe it unloads, maybe it doesn't.
Yep. Now, are you on a desktop or a laptop?
It's a desktop.
Yeah, most laptops have Bluetooth built in because they kind of expect you to use a Bluetooth mouse. But many desktops don't use Bluetooth because you typically it's hardwired and you have a wired keyboard and mouse.
Yeah, it's like 3 years old, and I never recalled if it said it specifically had it or not. Yep. I thought it did at one point, but I wasn't sure.
So a lot of people who buy a wireless mouse, they'll get one that has a dongle on it, and that plugs into a USB port, right. and then you have that wireless mouse. So if you get a Bluetooth mouse with Bluetooth in your computer, then you don't have that dongle sticking out.
Right.
So how many people leave it stuck into their laptop and then break it off when they put it in and out of their bag?
A lot.
Happens all the time.
Actually, Dave, I had a customer this week who said he'd broke a flash drive off and needed to know how to get the data off the drive. I said, well, yeah, I know a guy who knows a guy that can re-solder that for you. You say your brother's good at soldering?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we can try. I mean,
but yeah, so yeah, you break that connector off your your flash drive.
But you're
going to
pay even if it doesn't
USB
work,
dongle.
And it's not going to be cheap.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
There's a lot of time and effort into that.
You know, they got to be willing to understand that, you know, there's no guarantees.
And of course, this comes right back to that doggone, this is the only copy of this I have.
Yep.
Oh, I see. It wasn't worth $7 for you to buy another flash drive, but it's worth hundreds of hours of my time for free to fix it for you. No.
You know, the thing of it is, though, and they're getting so cheap, is the portable hard drives. I mean, yes, I understand the convenience of a flash drive. They're great. But when you can get a portable, portable hard drive, a terabyte,
and it just plugs right into the network.
It plugs right into the network or right into your machine. You know, so the connector or that, there's just a cable. You can replace that cable because it's usually mini connector to USB.
Right.
Not that big of a deal. But the hard drive is, you know, a little more durable than these flash drives.
You need multiple backups of everything.
Exactly. Well, that's what I'm saying. You do it for one and then you quick plug in the other. And you got yourself covered both ways.
Right.
I mean, I can't stress that enough.
Right. So, it's a... Do we have any...
No, so I think we answered Mark's question and went beyond that.
I think we did.
So basically, odds are it's just a service and there's no Bluetooth on the actual tower.
Right.
Right.
If you went into your hardware manager...
Is this a laptop?
No, it's a desktop.
It's pretty unlikely.
Yeah.
But you should be able to see if you have one. And basically the idea is, like I said, Windows loads everything, determines whether or not it's got a connection. If it doesn't, it stops it.
Right. Okay, thank you very much.
Yep. We see that too regularly, actually. But
ironically, all Macs come with Bluetooth built in. Because Apple ships a wireless keyboard and mouse with the iMacs now,
right.
Cutting down on all the wires. So the only wire you need is your power cord, which is convenient. But then you go through all those batteries.
Right.
So Apple sells a battery charger. Actually, in a very strange case, Apple's battery charger is a decent price. 6 batteries and a charger for $30.
Wow.
That's a pretty decent price.
That's a pretty decent price.
So I bought several of them, and my TV remotes and the Xbox controllers. We use rechargeable batteries a lot now.
Yep.
Except I can't find half of them, and I'm afraid they got thrown away because someone thought they weren't rechargeable.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Chuck. Chuck, are you in Fairport?
No, Brighton.
Riga.
Yeah.
New Brighton. York. How did you get Fairport out of Riga?
No, Brighton.
Brighton? Oh, Brighton. How'd you get Fairport out of... How'd I get Riga? Doesn't matter. He's in Brighton, New York. What can we do for you, Chuck?
Hey, I got you in my ear. You two guys in my ear.
Yeah, go easy on them. I'm running Windows 7. I'm also running Avast for virus detection. And I keep coming up with that I can't scan some files, one of which is, or the folder is $recycle.bin.
Yeah.
And how do I find that folder?
It's there.
I have hidden files turned on, so I should be able to see it. But.
Well, it's more than just hidden. That's a special reserved system file. That's everything in your recycle bin.
Okay. Well, I open the recycle bin. There's nothing.
Nothing visible in it either.
Basically, yeah.
They're not interested in you playing around with that because it's a system file that they don't want you playing with. And in fact, if you want to see what's in $recycle.bin, you just open the recycle bin.
And it's empty. So what's it flagging? It says it can't scan it. So why is it even looking there in the first place?
Because somewhere along the line you told it to or didn't tell it not to.
Yeah, it's a file on the hard drive, so it tries to scan all files. Sometimes if you, now depending on the settings, if it does find a malicious program, it can quarantine it or it can delete it.
Right.
And so if it deletes it, it often goes through the recycle bin.
But in this case, it's simply notifying me that it cannot scan that
right.
folder.
Does it say why it can't?
That's what's annoying about it.
So I've seen a few of those where it says it can't scan it because it's encrypted, and it's usually the Flash installer. A lot of companies are encrypting their installers to prevent the bad guys from modifying them.
Right.
But then the bad guys can encrypt it too, and it doesn't help any.
Right.
So right now, it's just a bunch of, it's meaningless gibber that's flashing on the screen every time Avast runs.
You may be able to add it to the exclude setting, so it doesn't try looking at it.
Right. I can't be the first person to notice this.
Well, what I'm wondering is if you don't have a virus called...
Ooh, that'd be interesting.
$recycle.
Don't tell me that.
It's pretty unlikely, because if you did, you wouldn't be able to open your recycle bin.
Yeah.
Because it would replace it. So I'm not really worried about that. I just it just suddenly came into my head.
Yeah, all the hits I'm finding are how to...
Yeah.
How to show or hide it on the desktop. Here is one post. I wish they would put dates on these. It's at c:\recycler.
Yeah, this doesn't say recycler, just recycle.bin.
Yep. $ recycle that bin.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be a Trojan called recycle.bin. But that's, it's a couple of years old.
I'm running Avast 2015. I just put it on about a month or so ago. When I used to run AVG, I did not see anything like this.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it's just not a bug in Avast, in the latest version of Avast. I'm not seeing anything about it anywhere else, and I'm not seeing it on any of my machines. But that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Just that I'm not seeing it. I wish I had a better answer for you. I just don't.
Okay, we'll keep looking.
Sorry.
Thanks.
I'll keep looking into it, see what I run into. Going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. So if you're on the line, please stay on the line. We'll get to you shortly. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Edwards.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
That's a cool intro, but you know what? It's got a skip
in it. It's got a skip in the, in the like, middle of the thing. It's making me a little crazy.
Yeah, it's like you get into it and the hiccup. Yeah.
To go back to Chuck for a second, who was our last caller.
That's what I was
going to
do, yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay, go ahead.
The recycle bin should be an invisible folder at the root of the hard drive. So $ recycle bin, and then a unique user ID for your username. So each user has their own recycle bin, and each disk has its own recycle bin.
So there's two things that it could possibly be. One is there's a recycle bin it can't get to because that drive is not mounted somehow, although it should be on that drive, not on the C drive.
Yeah.
Or a user that it can't get to for whatever reason.
Permissions. It doesn't have permission to see that other user's recycle bin.
Right, exactly.
So you have to run as administrator.
Right, right. The other thing I might suggest, just for the heck of it, run Malwarebytes and see if it finds anything that may have been, that may be some sort of Trojan or other malware sitting in your system. But I'm more leaning toward it doesn't have permission to read a different user's recycle bin because they're set up as you. I mean, you're running Avast as you. So that's that.
And even we hear this a lot on the Mac side too. Even if you are the only user on the computer, the computer keeps a higher level user. Well, depending on your direction, a higher level, a more privileged user. On Unix systems and the Mac, it's called root. And on Windows, it's called system administrator. And that administrator has more permission to see the other folders. So even if you are the only user, there is still permission on your files that you cannot see other users' files.
Right. A couple of quick things. Oh, one of my favorite things. Microsoft is having a game developers conference this week. And the company is trying to convince game makers that Windows 10 is the platform they should be using for all of their titles. And part of that involves, you know, SDKs, demonstrations, and session talks. One of my favorite was new opportunities for independent developers with a fascinating talk from Microsoft's Chris Charla last Wednesday. And Charla explained the intricacies of game development and had a bunch of slides on the screen, and it showed Windows 10 and all the other Windows things. Xbox, whatever. But one particular slide stood out from the rest, and it was one depicting Windows 7 running on an old IBM XT from 1983, 32 years ago.
Yep.
Clearly, they want you to think of Windows 7 as old technology. And, of course, we already know that, you know, Windows 10 is where they're heading. Windows 7 is not where you should be. And after all, Microsoft has already ended mainstream support for Windows 7. You can still pay for support for another 5 years, but free support is done. Windows 7 is done in terms of free support from Microsoft. And that means it's going to go the way of all the others, where they start taking support off the web.
Which is stupid.
Which is stupid, but that's otherwise, how do they get you to buy new products?
You won't buy the new one, yeah. And the irony there is that Microsoft, for decades, has touted their backward compatibility.
Yeah.
That you can run our new OS on a really old computer. That's been a feature for all these years.
Yeah. And they're saying that's one of the reasons they named it Windows 10 instead of Windows 9. You know, it's that subtle little bump, you know, like something is 99 cents instead of a dollar, it seems cheaper. They want to go the other way. 10 is farther away from 8 than 9 is.
Yep.
You know, it's two digits instead of one.
They should have done it 11 so they'd be ahead of Mac OS 10.
Yeah.
Oops.
And they could have got Michael McKean. Michael McKean? What was his
Michael
name?
Michael
McKean. McKean, yep, to go to 11.
Yep. Actually, that was...
Spinal Tap.
What's his name? Jamie Lee Curtis's husband, Chris, whatever his name is. Well, goes to 11, don't it? Yeah, Spinal Tap, great film. If you haven't seen Spinal Tap, I don't know what's wrong with you. So, are you still on Windows 7? You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
Christopher Guest.
15. Christopher Guest, yeah. That's his name.
And the other irony there is that we've been telling people, XP's dead, you got to get off of it. Now we're telling him 7 is dead, too.
7 is dead.
Hey, I just had a customer call me up, said, Dave, I need your advice. I want to know if you can take my XP box and speed it up. I go,
yeah, put it in the car and do 65 on the expressway.
Alternately, we can bring it up to the roof and make it do 32 feet per second per second.
That was my point. I said, well, do you work in a tall building? You could, you know, take it to the window and see how fast it drops. He goes, oh, it's not worth fixing? I go, no. I said, it's a good doorstop. It'll hold the door open while you bring the new machine in, but you might want to wait until Windows 10 comes out so you can do
that. How do you possibly make a Windows XP machine faster? I mean, you can add more RAM. You can put a bigger... I mean, you're just basically buying a new machine.
Replace the logic board, put in a faster processor in it.
Right. Yeah. It's just not going to happen.
Because you can run Windows 7 on it.
No, it probably...
Which is also dead, so...
Yeah.
What the hell? Why not?
But, you know, I mean, even to suggest to put Windows 7 on it, you know, that was like, no.
Yeah, no, it's got to be Windows 8.
Why waste your money? You know, I mean, it's ludicrous. I said, just hold off a little bit. You've gone this long. You didn't even get into 7. Right. Bear with it a little bit. Goes, well, I don't do much with it.
Right.
I says, this is where I also said, well, if you want to just spend a few bucks right now, get a Chromebook. As for a couple $100, you can get a Chromebook. You can do, if you're just doing emails and surfing the web a little bit, a Chromebook will do you.
Yep.
And then if you need something more powerful, if you don't want to do games or whatever, then you can always go into another tower of that.
Yep. Exactly.
There's some options out there, and you know, you don't necessarily have to get the big box, especially if you only are using limited resources in it anyways.
Exactly. Exactly.
So.
So, yeah, there's a whole lot of options out there, but Windows 7 is no longer one of them.
Yeah, January 13th, 2015.
Are you gonna
get the phone,
or are you
just gonna, okay. Not enough time. Yeah, January 13th, 2015 was the end of mainstream support. Extended support goes until 2020, but that doesn't really mean too much
extended
for the average
folks.
Extended
support is what you're paying for.
Yep.
So if you have a contract with Microsoft and you can call Microsoft directly and get support, that's got another 5 years to run.
Yep.
But free support, the support you would want, is gone. No more Windows 7 support.
And the frustration there is that there are so many less than reputable tech support companies online that if you Google Windows support, you won't find Microsoft. You'll find fake companies that will take your money and remote control into your computer to fix your problem. And who knows what they do, collecting your passwords and the scare tactics they use to show people. I just read an article. Someone brought up Netstat and showed, here's all the network connections on your computer. That means people are hacking into you right now.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that's you. You tech support guy on the phone. You are hacking into me right now.
Exactly.
So, yeah, do not call those companies that aren't who they claim to be. You know, don't trust the search results. Yes, they may be tech support people, but they're not local to you. They're not.
Yeah, and
go to certainly not Apple.
Microsoft. Yeah. And what's even more frustrating is Bing is probably the worst. You search for Microsoft help in Bing, and Microsoft.com is like the 10th one down.
Or believe them when they sit there and say they're from Microsoft, and yes, they understand that you have an issue. They got a report saying that you're having an issue. I've also heard that BS story.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you hear that all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got that. I got a pop-up on my machine that said Microsoft has detected blah, blah, blah. Click this link to talk to a live person. I thought, really, Microsoft detected an error on my Chromebook.
Yeah.
That's great of them. On my iPad. Or on your iPad, exactly.
Yeah. Yep.
That's great of them. They're amazing, that company.
It's just amazing what they can do. But again,
and it's an ad. Websites have ads, you know, tires, you know, peanut butter. Somebody bought an ad for fake virus.
Yep.
And just close your browser. Most of the time, if you try to close the window, it'll spawn a new window.
Yep.
So close the browser.
Yeah.
And don't believe the messages that pop up. If you have an antivirus program running, that will be the name of the window that pops up and says you have a virus.
Right.
But don't believe them. Don't Google random people. Don't believe random phone calls.
Right. There is absolutely no reputable computer company in the world that will call you.
No.
Unless you're already paying for them to support.
Yeah. Service. And if you are, you know you are because it ain't cheap.
Yeah.
Right. And or they'll call you back if they're doing a follow up. And you've already talked to them.
Right, right.
That's
but
the
then
only
you've got a person, you've got a case number, you've got pretty much...
That's the only reason
you know
I would.
You talk to them already.
Yeah. That's the only reason I call somebody.
That's one of the dangers of... Well, one of the many dangers of not of the internet and not having a phone book. So if you were having problems with something in your house, you'd go to the phone book and look up the local company.
Right.
Now on Google, you get some company out of India that works through UK and they claim to be their Microsoft support. We see that a lot sometimes in our company. We provide support for Apple computers. We are not Apple.
Right.
But we do Apple support.
Right.
And sometimes people think we are Apple. We have an Apple logo on our building. Well, we're Apple authorized. We are not Apple, but we're legitimate. We do.
Right.
We don't intentionally tell you you have problems when you don't.
Right.
And that's what these bad guys on the phone are doing.
All right. That music tells me we're done. We're done for another week. That's 2 hours of your life you won't get back. We want to thank you for spending it with us. We'll see you in another 166 hours. Probably the best way you can start off that 166 hours is to just sit here and stay on this station because George is about to come in and play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to make sure it actually goes out over the air because while George is very good at many things, running the board is not one of them. And he admits that. We'll be back next week with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 55 minutes after the hour, Soundbites member supported. Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening.